Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of The Dark Hustle. Thank you so much for listening to my podcast and subscribing and following us. It's super cool. You guys are the best. Also, if you are not a member of our Patreon, what are you doing? Go check it out. It's got multiple levels to choose from, and we have early access over there for all of our episodes and a bunch of other stuff. So go check us out on Patreon.
Hello.
Hi. This is Tina.
Yes, ma'am.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I mean, you know, it's Friday.
It's Friday. Happy Friday.
That doesn't really matter to people like you and I.
No. It's the busy time on Friday.
But that's a good thing. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
How
are you doing?
Well, first of all, thank you for doing this. I think it's totally cool because you're a pretty business savvy chick. So because I've done some work for you, I've done a bunch of work for you, and I'm grateful for that. But you, so you have two businesses, correct, that you are partners with on both of them?
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
All right. So we've got tell me a little bit about that, because we've got Pleasant View and then we got the spa. They're like the same, but not the same, right?
Right. So I've been in this dog business for going on 16 years, I think, which is crazy because I'm only 25.
Holy cow.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm not 25 anymore, but I feel that in the morning when I get out of bed.
How old are you? No, don't answer that question. That's not a good question.
I'm about the same, probably. I'm close to Emily's age, a little bit older than her, and I think you're in that same category. So, you know, where it starts to kind of hurt a little bit more when you get out of bed, that age.
Yeah, well, but wait, so you started 16 years ago. How old were you when you first got into it?
I think I was 26 or 25.
Oh, wow.
When I first dove into the dog business world.
Yeah.
On a wing and a prayer and without a clue about anything. But I thought I knew back then, right? Don't we all?
Yeah, we all are. Yeah, we all thought we knew it back then.
Yeah. And so, you know, I was just young enough to jump in, you know, full force and not worry about, you know, the future and where I was going and what I was doing. So here we are, like, several years later and two locations and 65 employees and lots of hard lessons learned along the way. So I had three pet spas, which is dog, just bougie word for dog daycare, boarding and grooming, which is, you know, just kind of the new age kennels, I guess. So we don't really talk about kennels anymore in this industry.
That is true, though.
It's different. You know, it's people think of dog boarding, they think of, oh, like a kennel where the dog goes and, you know, gets put in a kennel all day and let out twice a day. And that ended up like that for a lot of dogs, that works. But for a lot of dogs, that can be a very stressful situation for the dog and the owner, right? And so a lot of owners don't even want to leave town because of that. But so about 15 years ago, I had I was working for a chamber of commerce at the time, doing like their new business sales and stuff. And a friend of mine was building, she was a groomer for a lot of years, and she was building a brand new kind of new age vision at the time of what dog boarding would be, which is kennel free. So you have all the dogs in a group together or several groups together. And then they're really only kenneled or put up either not at all or, you know, at nighttime when they're eating or sleeping. So it was kind of new for the time back then. I don't think there was a ton of those types of businesses around the United States.
No, you're right. You're right. There wasn't. There was, because I'm 40 and you're right. Like, you didn't hear of doggy daycares back
no.
then.
And I know, like, telling my family, like, my dad was like, that's crazy. Who would, you know, send their dog to daycare? And now, of course, like, his dog goes to daycare and he's all, you know, bought in 110% and he can't imagine life without it and all that stuff. So, but it was kind of a new business style back then, but she had been grooming for a long time. And so she had a great clientele built up of people who trusted her, but she had no business sense whatsoever. And she had no business going into business at the time. And it was appalling the amount of things where I was like, what? You don't know anything. But, so she was like, hey, come be my partner. Because I don't know what I'm doing in this, you know, starting this big business where she was going from, you know, 10 groom dogs a day to all of a sudden, you know, 50 or 60 with overnight and all the logistics that go on in that. So, but to back up, thanks for having me. I know like all of your episodes are horse based pretty much. So I feel really honored to be like the dog person.
Well, I mean, yes, you are correct. It has been pretty much all horses, but I like to try to tap into, exactly what you just said, like the business part of it, like just business in general. And it's cool. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you, because business is kind of business regardless of where it's at. Like you have just basic logistics, like what you just said, of how business works. And so it's cool to kind of, you know, get a chance to talk to you about that, because, you know, you literally went from, so you guys partnered up when she told you about it, what, 16 years ago, and then you just kind of been little heel after heel after heel after heel. Like, when did you decide to, did you strictly just start off with keeping it as a day care, like a day per day deal, or like a overnight vacation deal, or how did that kind of get up to where you're at now?
So back then it was a brand new facility, and we built it as like a big grooming salon with five groomers back then. And then we had rooms, like kind of like hotel rooms for the dogs. And then every dog that stayed overnight had to go into the daycare all day. So, you know, all day long they're in like a socialized setting. However, it's a little bit different than actual daycare because dogs, of course, don't always get along. So a lot of that comes with...
Well, people are like that too, so...
Yes, right, that's true. Kids are biting and pinching each other and all that too, but I think sometimes people
are more
nervous
about
their dog getting hurt than their child getting hurt. So
yeah, no, yes, I agree with you.
Yeah, so a lot of like the screening process and... But, you know, to go back to what you said about a lot of horse people and trainers and whatever getting into the business world, it's really interesting because back when I first started, I was seeing a lot of these talented like groomers, like my old partner, or like different people that I'm like, you know, that would come work for us. And I'd be like, gosh, you're just like an amazing groomer. Why wouldn't you just do this on your own? And I think one of the biggest lessons that I've come to learn, and what makes me like appreciate some of the things that I have been able to bring to the table, is that it took me maybe like 5 or 6 years to realize just because you're good at a trade does not mean you should be in business with it, or it does not mean you're a good business person. And sometimes it can be, you know, actually the total opposite, because some of the people who are like the most talented in their trade or their skill, because they are so good at what they do, they have a really hard time trusting anyone else to do it in their own way, right?
Yeah.
So I guess it's a luxury of me. I'm not that talented at any of the things. Like, I'm not a great groomer or whatever. But so I guess I have a little bit – I feel less controlling over it having to be my way. Like, I'm much more like I have non-negotiables on things that I won't allow in our business. But – I'm very much like, oh my gosh, this person does it in a different way from me, but it actually turns out just as good, if not 10 times better. And so I kind of like give them the freedom to do it their way and thrive in their own right, if that makes sense.
That's funny you brought that up, because that is a hard thing to do. I think it might be like a left brain, right brain thing, because it's a hard thing to, and a survival thing, because, you know, being able to let, there's a quote that I read somewhere that said, if you want to grow, you've got to fire the hustler and hire the CEO. And what it means to me is that you have to learn how to delegate, let go of things, and trust somebody else to do it in order to grow. You know what I mean? Because you're not going to run a business by your one little lonesome self. You're not Superman or woman. Like, I've had to have this conversation with myself in the mirror. Like, look, you cannot do it all. If you want to grow, you're going to have to.
And the trust is the big key word there that you said, you know, is the trust part. You have to trust that they're going to do it and that they might make mistakes along the way. But as long as those mistakes don't violate your non-negotiables, like your whatever you set as these are my non-negotiables, if you, you know, for me, it's like if you mistreat a dog or if you or mistreat your coworker, there's like those are my two big non-negotiables. Like basically if you're not good to dogs or you're not good to the people next to you, that's basically why you're going to get fired. If you, you know, forget to do something or you know, like don't clean properly that day or whatever it might be. I've learned to let those things go much more than I did in my younger years, because otherwise I was so miserable just micromanaging everything, and I was stifling my own business's growth by trying to control everything. So, and you know, Josh Hasty, Emily's husband, he said something to me the other day that I had never heard, and it made me, it was like one of those aha moments, because he said, you know, sometimes in business you have to decide, did you start your business to have a job, or did you start your business to have a business? And I was like, oh my gosh, mind blowing. And I was like, when I first started, I started to have a job. Like I wanted to work in it every single day and whatever. But as I've gotten older, you know, it's changed for sure. But you have to give up a little bit of control if you're going to do it. I know so many good people at like grooming or whatever they're really good at in their craft, horse trainer, dog trainer, whatever it might be. And they never grow and they're miserable by the time they're, you know, 40, if they've been doing it for 10 years, they're like so burnt out, because they're having to do everything on their own. And
yeah.
It's a good way to get burnt out, and unless you don't want to grow, or unless you just have a vision of staying where you're at and really having that job and not that bigger vision.
Yeah, because he's right. I mean, a business is not, a lot of people confuse it. They're like, you know, well, I want to go work for myself so I can do what I want to do. Okay, well, first of all, that's not going to happen. Second of all, are you, you know, like what he said, are you going to get to the point to where the business should run itself and you should be enjoying it and not a slave to the business. And you become like what you just said, you're miserable after X amount of time.
Burnt out for sure. Yeah. Yeah. And you lose the passion for it then at times, you know, because you're trying to do everything and you don't get to focus on your craft anymore.
So now you said old partner, I'm assuming y'all are not together anymore and you have a new partner.
I have a new partner, and the old partner that I learned lots of lessons from, a bad partnership, because partnerships in life or business are very challenging, as everybody who's married knows. So this is the part
I want to talk to you about, because I'm going to give you just a little backstory, the reason why, because when you were placing your order with me and you said you had a partner and blah, 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 I knew right then I wanted to talk to you, because I had a really bad experience back in 2015. This lady literally moved me states away and I trusted her. We were going to go into business together and grow my business. And then she just abandoned me and she tried to pin all kinds of legal stuff. Yeah. It was it really messed my head up for a minute.
Oh yeah. I'm so sorry to hear that.
Well,
no.
But
brutal.
That's why I wanted to talk to you, because how do you choose that? How do you look at that? How do you get over that? What did you do to continue where you're at today? Like, you easily could have said, screw it, but you didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my first partnership was awful. Like, it was so toxic. Like, I became the buffer between like a narcissist and our employees who I cared about more than, you know, like I don't have real children. So like these employees become like my little children, and I'm really protective of them and their feelings and you know, my partner was like one of those business people that's like, she's in it for her, and she was in it to make herself money and look good and didn't care who she ran over in the process. So it became very super toxic, and it ended up where I just left like a multi-million dollar business with nothing because I had no peace when it came to this person. Like, they were just,
oh wow.
I mean, it was bad. It was bad. Like, I ended up moving 5 states away. I got divorced because of it. Like, it was just very unhealthy. And, you know, in that time of your life when you're like 25 to 35, you're growing yourself a lot too. And yeah. I, you know, I'm kind of one of those people who trust pretty easily. So I stayed in it far too long, where trying to think like, if I could just work harder, do better, like it's going to, you know, and at that point I put in so much time, energy, money, resources into building a business. So there we had 3 locations, and like I said, a couple $1 million a year. And it was just, you know, I went back during COVID because I moved down here at the time, and I went back during COVID, and we had a lady who was like running the boarding at the time. And it was the time when it was like things were about to get closed down. And I was like, we had a older lady that was running our boarding facility at one of the locations. And I said, we have to make sure we try to get this PPP money to, and our first priority needs to be keeping this lady like going. She has nothing else. Like, she's busted her ass for us. And she said, right, nobody's getting paid except for me. And I was like, so that was the day I walked out, and I never went back, and I signed over my rights to this business I had built, and
I
fell
do
apart.
Not blame
you know,
one
I
bit.
Fell up. I just fell completely apart. You know, I moved five states away, and I was just broken, like 100%, had nothing, you know, and had to figure out what I was going to do. I just got like a job at at the YMCA, actually, like doing some marketing and stuff. And I was completely broken down. And I was like, what did I just spend, you know, 10 years of my life doing? And it's completely gone for nothing. I had no retirement, no savings, no nothing. So, but I did.
I'm glad you just said that, because I think people go through, and you can probably agree with this or not. You know, when you go through something traumatic like that, because, you know, you have 2 types of traumas. You have, like, sudden, just happens real quick, and then you have the kind of trauma that lasts for years, like, over and over and over. And when you go through something like that and you, like, leave it, I firmly believe that it is a grieving process. Like, you go through the process of shock and then sadness and then, like, you know,
regret.
Mad. And, like, you have to go through those emotions to deal with what you just dealt with. Like, that was a hard decision.
Yeah. And I was, you know, from that community. So I had tons of contacts. Like, I was a member of their county board. Like, I knew everybody. And I so was broken down from this person just telling me that it was all her doing everything. And I was nothing because, you know, whatever, X, Y, or Z, who know, you know, depending on the day. That I truly, like, left everything and was thinking I contributed nothing. And so I left all my family, all my friends, like, everything.
I don't like this girl. I don't like this lady.
No. I questioned everything about my abilities. Like, you know, I was just so broken after that from this one person just preying on me. Like, it sounds like your partner did to you, like, preyed on you and brought you into something and then broke you down. And that's a personality type, I swear, because I've seen it too often.
Yeah, but, you're right. What's that quote where people say givers have to, because business, period, takes a lot of work. You got to have somebody that's going to work, like work, and then you have to have somebody who's going to, you have to have kind of 2 dynamics, but you're right. There's that quote that goes around that talks about how givers have to set a limit because takers won't.
Exactly.
And
oh,
that, yeah. You're right. That that dynamic of 2 types of personalities kind of always end up with each other because of that, and it's hard to... You know, but you came out, you made the right decision. You came out on the better end of it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And so much stronger and more secure in who I am and my value and my contributions to to a business and this particular type of business, you know. And so we had an employee that worked for us up there who had moved to Nashville. And so I, you know, came down here just trying to get away from everything after that. And I had a couple friends here, my college roommate, and then this girl.
Well, wait, so hold on. You came from where to Nashville? You're in Nashville now, but came from where?
Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
That's my original, like my family and all that's from there. So I had planned to just come down here. Well, this girl that used to work for us that kind of knew the dynamics of the partnership because she's a really, you know, smart, intelligent girl, and she had been our client, and then she worked for us, and then she had her issues with my partner where my partner tried to beat her down, and she was like, screw you, I, you know, am too strong for you to do this. So anyway, she had moved to Nashville, and you know, we had kept in touch because she worked for us up there, and we had kept in touch, and she said, she just kept calling me and saying, there's no place like what we have up there, down here. She's like, we're in this huge growing market and there's nothing like it. Like, come help me start something down here. And so then, you know, when I came here just to kind of get away from the toxic environment up there, I had only planned to stay for like a few months and just get my head right and get my life together. And so I came down and she was working for a different dog place at the time. And it was terrible. Like, it was super toxic, you know, like same thing. The lady just was really controlling. She was a trainer at the time, a dog trainer. And, you know, she was stifling the business from being what it could. And it had this amazing location in Mount Juliet, which is just outside of Nashville by the airport. But it's kind of like a bougier part of Nashville. It's very like the clientele in that area there's a ton of people and quite a bit of money in that area. So it's like, how can you screw this up? You know, how can you screw up having a business in this prime location? So me and her sat down and we talked about picking out like a different location and how we could start up. But at this point I had nothing. I had no savings, no resources. I had lost, you know, my connections were all up in Wisconsin. But we ended up actually talking her, the owner of the place she worked at the time, into selling to us. So she was kind of failing at the time. She was way underwater. So after several meetings with her, she sold us her business, which really was just the location and then a little bit of the equipment that was there. And from there we took it and we just never looked back. And that was 6 years ago. And since then we've gone from, I think we had 5 employees to start with, to we have like 55 in that location right now. And that partnership is healthy, is super, super healthy. I guess one of the things that could be helpful for like somebody listening, if you're thinking about a partnership, is first of all, I would like define your roles like very clearly, but it's hard in this type of business, right? Because we're 24/7, 365. There's never going to be, it's not like an 8-to-5 where it's like somebody does this and somebody does that. And then you go home at night and it closes and nobody's on call on the weekends. And, you know, it's really, there's just a lot of moving parts, right? Cause you have living, breathing things and employees and customers and all the things. And, so we did a interesting partnership where our partnership agreement is that we are paid when we're in the business. So, one of the things that I always felt like is a big resentment is when you have a partnership and one person feels like they're doing all the work. In reality, both people are probably contributing something, right? They're either contributing expertise and knowledge, so they don't have to be in the business all the time, or they're contributing the actual work of the everyday. They're there in the building doing everything. And there's places for both, but we didn't have a silent partner. Both of us were expected to both be in the business building it and growing it. So we just made it where there was no resentment, was you're paid when you're in the building, because otherwise you can get all kinds of, you know, pent up issues with each other. And so that's been one really, really helpful thing that we've done as a partnership. And then also she's just like a more stable, grounded human being and treats people the way I treat people. And so it's been really healthy.
Well, it's hard for anybody to expect anybody to kind of like, it's too bad people don't come with little trailers of who they are so you could get an idea of their character. But, you know, it's hard to be able to do that. You just have to trust that who you're meeting and who you're talking to, you know, is what they say they are. But I've always kind of wondered how partnerships start off like that. It's usually someone that you've known for a while. It's somebody that you, you know.
Yeah. And she, no, like, when she worked for me, I knew, like, her abilities and her talent and her work ethic, and where she was going to be able to contribute a ton was where I was not super strong. So, and don't get me wrong, it's not all, you know, rainbows and sunshine. We have had drag-out scream fights, but the respect is always there where we can fight it out. And I think one thing is, I would say the most important number one trait of a good, healthy partnership is honesty. Like my previous partner, she was not an honest human being. She would steal and lie and cheat to get ahead. My partner now and myself, like, we're honest to a fault where we'll, like, you know, tell you our biggest faults. And we have so much trust in each other on how things are going that you can't have a partnership without that.
Yeah, no, I 110% agree. It's like that, I think that's the basics of any type of morality or character. Like even the littlest things, like, you know, people will be like, well, for me, I know I can relate, like with orders, you know, if you didn't get it and it's not right, like you're going to get your money back. I can't keep that. Like, it's just not like I can't, you're going to get, I've sent refunds for like 18 cents before because it's just right. It's just like there's no gray when it comes to certain things in business. Some things in business are black and white. There's no negotiation. And I believe like money and honesty and things, I completely agree 110%. Now, let me ask you this. So you guys, you didn't just start off with everything that you have now. You didn't start off with the grooming and the board and the spa. You started off with just kind of grooming, and then you just slowly went to where you're at now. What steps did you take after you decided to leave the first partner and get your mind together? You went back to this other lady, and then you guys, did you just start off bing bang, or did you take what she had already had?
The location we came into was like more of just a daycare. They didn't have grooming, so we didn't have grooming because I wasn't a groomer at the time. And so we had just daycare and boarding at the time. And we started out with that, and then we did have a space, though. We have a huge building, so we're like, you know, and one of the parts of the business that I've learned is that grooming is the necessity. So people can kind of get away without daycare and boarding. That can kind of be a luxury time thing, but grooming is a necessity. So that's what originally gets people into the door. And then once you have their trust being a groomer, you know, you can get their daycare and boarding business. So we found a
girl. I didn't know that. You just blew my mind. I didn't know that. I never would thought grooming would be.
Especially because of the doodle craze. I don't know if it's pretty much nationwide, but the doodle craze is like, you know, doodles are everything. Everybody's breeding everything to a poodle, right? So they have this coat that has to be groomed, and it's people that it used to be like show people had poodles, so they were just grooming them themselves and they knew how to properly care for them. Well, any oodle is like a sheep, so if you don't groom it properly, it ends up being matted to the skin like a sheep.
Oh wow.
So,
I didn't know
and
that.
You know, yeah, so that has become really like if most groomers are booked out like 6 to 8 weeks because there's so many oodle type dogs on their books, and it takes a long time to groom one of those. So that's really the thing that you can, because neither one of us were from here, so trying to build up, like building up my clientele in Wisconsin was easy. I knew everybody, knew me, they knew my family, they knew everything. So it was like, oh yeah, I know her, I'll bring my dog there, whatever, didn't even ask questions. And then to come into a new city where you don't know anybody, it's a lot more challenging to get them in the door in the first place. So we knew we had to have grooming eventually. So then at 35 years old, I decide, my old partner used to tell me, you could never be a groomer. You're not tough enough. You're not whatever enough, blah, blah, blah. In hindsight, it was just because she didn't want me to know all the things, because then I had the business smarts and the technical smarts. So at 35, I'm like, I'm going to learn to groom, which is terrifying because you're in your own business, so you're being super vulnerable because I had my own employees teaching me how to do this skill that they were amazing at, you know, and it was super vulnerable, but it was the best thing I ever did.
You are right. That is vulnerable because it's like, you know, people, when you first think business owner, okay, they do no wrong. They know it all, blah, blah, blah. Not in a negative sense, but like, yep. Like you hold yourself to another standard because you want, you're a leader, you're in a leadership role. And
right.
It's funny you said that it's vulnerable because that is, for me, I would feel the same way. I'd be like, okay, I need to do this, but I don't take advantage of me, you know, like.
Yes. Yes, and don't develop that attitude like, you know, like the attitude where they know you need them. That's hard
right.
When you get into business and you're trying to grow. When people like know that, okay, I can walk out tomorrow, and then you're screwed because you don't know how to do what
right.
I can do. And I wanted to know how to do every at that point after the bad experience in Wisconsin. I wanted to know that I could step in and run every piece of the business because I felt like that was the key. Piece of having employees that was missing, because if they mm-hmm. know that you can step in and take their schedule with whatever it be, you know, boarding or daycare mm-hmm. or grooming mm-hmm. or training or whatever it is, front desk, they're much less likely to develop that attitude, which is somewhat human nature when you're working for someone and you get frustrated a day to be angry at the leader or the boss and develop that like you need me attitude, it can be hard to stifle that. So
like
so
putting all eggs in you, don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
Don't ever depend
yeah.
on one particular, always have a, somebody said something one day a couple of years ago, I read it, they're like, business owners don't have a plan B. I was sitting there thinking, honey, I got a plan B, C, D, E, all the way down to G and F. Like, I'm going to make
every day
sure
of the week. Yeah,
this
every...
don't stop.
yes. Yeah. And there's never enough time. And I didn't set out to be like the world's best groomer. That wasn't like my passion.
Yeah,
I didn't think I was going to be able to. But
right.
I also found, which I didn't set out to find this lesson out, but I found that once the groomers, because we have like 10 groomers, which is kind of unheard of in this industry, groomers are notoriously a challenging group of people to employ because it's easy to start a grooming shop. So a lot of them end up on their own, you know, because it's, you just need a tub and a table and you put your sign up and you're good to go. So it's hard. And then they're also like an artistic group of people. So very like,
independent.
Yes. Artistic. very like, if you think of like musicians or any type of artist that, you know, they're not notoriously, they don't like to be on a certain schedule and told what to do and that type of thing. So, but once I was grooming side by side with them on the regular, I became so much more respectful of their, what they were doing and how hard it was. Like the first thing I did was like make them all go to 4-day work weeks. So instead of trying to tell them, oh, you just take one more dog here, one more dog there. Like I knew that's very overwhelming. It doesn't seem like that when you just add one more thing to the schedule, but I knew like it's hard on their body, it's hard on their mind. It's very physical. You have dogs barking all day long, you know, just really overstimulating. And so we made them go to 4-day work weeks, like just a lot of stuff that where I could be in their shoes and try to be an advocate for them in the business as a whole as we grew. I think that was really helpful. Come your bad partnership. Did you just stay where you were, 3 states away, and pop back up on your own?
Oh, she's going
This is not about me. I'm curious. I need to learn about how that works. That is, I didn't know that, and I would never have guessed that.
Yeah, no. Briefly, I have more history in graphic design, and I used to do primarily real estate graphics, so, you know, for homes prior to, like, Zillow, and I remember when Zillow was never even around, like, that's not how you bought a home, you had to get a magazine, and
So me and this, she was actually VP of the print company that we printed all these books through, that, you know, they printed all these 30-day publications for real estate advertising. And we were, she was a client of mine because I had went independent and for a couple of years. That's actually when Be More Media started. And so we had decided we were going to go into business together. She lived in Atlanta. So I always had a weird feeling about her because she were states away. And so then when I got down to Atlanta, literally like a week later, she tells me she's taking a job at another company and just kind of leaves me. And come to find out, at this point, I had dropped all of my customers and my clients that I had built up for my independent graphics business. So I literally had nothing, and she had already pissed all of them off, all of the customers she had gained. She was apparently not doing refunds. She was taking money here and there, and it was just really, it was a bunch of stuff that I didn't know about. And that, you talk about hard lessons, you know, that was the moment I knew that if you want to get anywhere in life, you better start asking questions, and you better start asking questions with people and figure out, you know, ask the questions that even if you feel like it's stupid, or, oh, no, they would never do that. No, you ask the question. You ask them and figure out what's going on. And so, anyways, I didn't have a business anymore. I didn't have any clients. I didn't have nothing. So I said, okay, well, I'm going to come back home. And I went to work bartending and waitressing for a couple of years to just build back general money, just money, you know, because I didn't have anything. And essentially, the real estate advertising graphics business, that whole business is nothing anymore. Nobody, you don't print real estate advertising. So I ended up, now we're in apparel, which I had already had experience in apparel anyways because of my little boutique. So it all, I mean, you know, it all works out. It works out for you in the end when you're going through something bad like that or something traumatic, or you learn about people and or somebody does you dirty. At the time when you're going through it, it's always scary, you know.
And awful, yeah.
Yes, and awful, and you don't know what to do, and you don't know how to handle it. You don't know what's going to happen. But if you – life has a funny way of working out later
you
on.
Learn
you know?
So much about your own ability, too, you know, where –
yeah,
where other people try to make you feel like you're nothing without them, and then when you have, when you're forced to like get out and do it on your own, and you just like, I wake up every day like everything could be gone tomorrow. So that is how, and maybe that's a little bit crazy, and probably why I'm anxious three quarters of the time. But
no,
it's because I know it could be gone tomorrow, and you better wake up and hustle every day, like, you know, and treat people in a way where, you know, they know you're working hard for them. You know, like, I think our employees, like, know that I'm there for them. Like, I'm showing up, and I'll put myself last so that they're taken care of. So, it's funny. You wish you knew all that stuff back then, but you wouldn't be as tough as you are if you had known it, you know, when you started out. So,
yeah,
you learn about other people, but about yourself is most important. About you learn about your own toughness and grit.
Well, yeah, and that makes me want. I wanted to ask you about something else. So when you come, you know, left the bad partnership, started the new one, and you're literally in this place that you don't know any people, what was kind of your first thought or first action to get the name out there and get you out there? Did you just drop a bunch of money in advertising, or did you start kind of going personal door to door? Did you just start, like, what was your first thought of, okay, well, how am I going to do this in a place where I don't know anybody?
Place of panic. Yes, it was. I wish we would have had a bunch of money to drop in advertising, but we were not even paying ourselves at the time. I was basically just living on nothing. And, I had a little, you know, I had, when I moved to Nashville, I had a place to stay, but that was it. And then, but we had no money. We weren't even paying ourselves for the first 6 months. Mackenzie's got, her family does really well and has helped her a lot. You know, when we've gone through those times where we can't pay ourselves. So we've had some help, that way, but we were, that's why now when our employees, let's say somebody comes in with their daycare dog and they want to add a bath on, and our groomers are like, nope, we're booked out, you know, 6 months, blah, 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 you know, and we're like, Excuse me. Nope. Y'all are living in luxury right now, but you don't remember when we first started and me and Mackenzie were
right.
going neighborhood, handing out handmade flyers, door hangers. We were doing every parade, every farmer's market, every event. I was making homemade treats like at my house and bagging them up, and we were taking them and we would just put like homemade coupons on them and hand them out to like at the grocery store, every place that we could possibly do that. And it was stressful because there was a big period where we were like, I don't know if we're going to make it. And we were stuck in this 5-year lease and we're like, we have to make it. There is no other option. We don't, you know, have any other capabilities to do anything else because we owe on this lease now that we just signed. So it was just pounding the pavement.
I'm so glad we are doing this. And I'm so glad you just said what you said, because I can relate. Me and my ex-husband literally rode around in a beat-up Toyota truck putting out candy and flyers on mailboxes, begging people to let us mow their lawn. And this was years ago. And it's funny because I think self-employed people or small businesses, you have to be on a level of delusion that, like, you have to believe
that's normal.
Yes, you have to be okay with the fact that what you're doing is absolutely insane, and that's why you're going to make it. It's because everybody else out there was not willing to do those things. Like, they're not
willing
to make the homemade treats, the flyers, the door-to-door. They're not willing to do it. And so you have to be in a level of – you just have to be on a level of craziness to make it. You really
right. Like, we were out building fences on the 4th of July, like, it, trying to make another yard so we could split up dogs. And I sold my vehicle to get a loan, or to, like, have enough money to get a loan to put in our first turf area, because we had only rocks at the time. And so we had this beautiful yard space, but it was filled with rocks. And I'm like, we can't, like, they look terrible in the pictures. We couldn't, you know, do anything. And so I sold my Jeep that I had, like, the one asset that I had after 10 years in business, to buy our first piece of turf. And now when we have employees, like, thinking, you know, they're having a hard day because their, you know, pinky nail fell off or something, I'm like, you don't know a hard day. You don't know.
Right. And I think that's one of the differences between, and you might can relate to, you know, it's been hard for me. Let me start this off different. It's been hard for me. Some of the challenges I have had running a business on social media goes back to some of those things that you and I are just talking about, like that type of grind. People don't realize what they have at the tip of their fingertips on social media when it comes to business versus having to build a business without that luxury. Like, to get up and go out there and grind the pavement, it's a whole nother different hustle.
And I still think there's a place for that. Like, in our second location that we opened, you know, we've had to go out and do that, like the farmers markets again, and get our name out and do that kind of stuff. And the connections that we make when we have an in-person contact, like, that person is much more likely to be a customer for life versus the person who comes in on social media. And, I mean, maybe they will be too, but when you can talk face-to-face with that person and get them to believe in you off-site, you really have some, like, a special connection with those people, I think. And I think there's still a place where people appreciate seeing someone coming out and doing that face-to-face kind of marketing stuff versus the social media too. Another place that people don't understand how luxurious they have it is that, gosh, now I'm a member of all these, like, owners of dog daycares groups on Facebook, and, like, the stuff that I was in my building, you know, 15 years ago trying to figure out, like, when we'd have an outbreak of kennel cough or something, which we don't call it kennel cough anymore, but when you have an outbreak of something, and I was, like, coming in at 3 a.m, cleaning everything times 10 and trying to figure out, like, what's the best practice for this, that, you know, there was just nobody to help you learn those things. And now you have, like, you just go on social media and put, like, hey, how do I get the best cleaner? And it's like, there's 20 responses of you just order it and you never have to leave your living room. I'm like, oh my gosh, I just got it made. They just have it made.
You are right, though. You are right.
But I do appreciate it probably much more than the person who can just say, hey, how do I deal with this situation or how do I deal with that, when we just had to sit in it and figure it out and try to do the right things and make a whole bunch of mistakes along the way.
I think
that probably builds grit.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure. There's no way that I could handle some of the stuff that gets thrown at me now today with, I think, like, now we have more of the employee crisis, like the type of employee that you have. There's no way I could handle a lot of that if I hadn't gone through those gritty times back then.
Now, what? When did you know it was time for a second location? Because you're both locations do a little bit of the same thing, but they're different now, right?
Right. So our second location is actually just on my home property, which is a big part of it. So the drive to our big location is about an hour for me each way. So we kept getting, being in Nashville where people are out on tour a lot and stuff, we were getting quite a few boarding dogs that were staying a long period of time, like let's say 3 or 4 weeks. And oftentimes I would just bring those dogs home with me because when they're constantly whether they were just in a kennel, like at a vet's office, or if they were with us where they're out playing all day long, like that's going to wear on a dog's immune system. They're going to get crabby. They're going to get sick. Like, it's just a long time to be overly stimulated like that. Where they're, you know, if you think about a dog at your house, they might sleep like 7 or 8 hours a day and just be relaxed and calm. And so,
right.
Anyway, I kept bringing these long stay dogs home, and that can get annoying because, you know, you bring dogs in. I have my own dogs, and then they're, you know, it's your home. So like bringing constantly dogs into that, it's just stressful. And so when we were thinking about a second location, it was post COVID and the employee personalities were changing a bit. Right. And I don't know if there's research on that. I'm sure there is, but what we were seeing was a lot more employees who felt like it was okay to not show up. You know, where it was okay to be a little bit softer. Like if they were just had a cough, they would, you know, call in for a week and call out. They say call out in the South. We say call in the North. It's different. But they would call out for like a week at a time. And so when we were talking about doing a second location, and so this is me starting over again for the 7th time. I think this was my seventh location being involved in starting. And I was like, you know, if we put it in Nashville, which was our first thought, because we could have, right now we're at about 200 dogs a day at our big location.
Holy cow.
And I was like, there's no problem. Like, Nashville is growing every day. We can build up another 200 dog location. And at that point, I was starting to get into horses again. And I just was like having that whole, I don't want another 200 dog location and 50 employees. And if someone calls out 30 minutes away, it's 5 in the morning. And it's, again, 24/7, 365. So, you know, dogs have seizures. Dogs have injuries. Dogs get sick. Dogs, like, there's so much that can go on in a business like this that's out of your control that has to have your time and energy. Like, you can't just say, I'm going to close at 6 o'clock and I'll be back tomorrow morning. Every single night I go to bed at 10 o'clock and I'm looking at the cameras, making sure no dogs are out of their kennels, no dogs are having seizures. And then at 5 in the morning, I wake up and I look again, what's going on? I'm either there or I'm looking on the camera, making sure no dogs, you know, God forbid, passed away. Cause dogs pass away sometimes. And, you know, just so many things that your anxiety is always heightened, I think, in this job. And, so I just didn't like looking at the cost benefit. Yeah, we could have made $1 million and whatever, but I just didn't want that. I wanted to get some peace back in my life but still wanted to work with dogs. And so we just decided to have kind of more of a boutique place where you'd have longer stay dogs or, you know, dogs, if you needed to take them, like our other locations right in the city, you can't just go walk them. Well, here we can take dogs that are like, you know, geriatric, or I can just go, if something's wrong, I go check on them at midnight, you know, just a lot easier. So that's why we started the second location. But then that one started to grow. Because at first I was like, oh, it'll just be me and one other person and it'll be easy. And no, then it started to grow and now we have 10 people here. And
But that's funny. That is a good thing. I feel what you're saying, though. I mean, I guess you do have to ask yourself at some point, do you want to stay here or do you want to continue to grow or do you want to go back down and handle it? Because, you know, you're never off.
Right. Right. Never. Never. Nope.
So that's a big consideration when it comes to if you want to decide to work for yourself or not work for yourself. Because, you know, I'm sure people tell you all the time, you know, take a day off or do this or do that. You can't. Like, you just...
No.
It's 24/7 in your brain. It's not somebody else's company, so you can shut it off at 5. Right. Even then, when you work for other people, you got to worry about it, but...
Not the same. Yeah, you can, like, if you're on vacation,
right,
you can shut it off. Well, that's never happened. You know, it just... Also, like, I have high expectations, so... I can't just leave it and think like, oh, it's going to be fine. Like, I'm going to be constantly checking in and making sure, you know, it's done the way we still want it. Yeah, we give our employees freedom and all that, but we still set a high standard for how it has to be. And if it's not that way, then you have to have those difficult conversations.
Right. Now, you said you used to ride horses and then you got out of it and then now you're back in it, obviously. So how did that transpire?
Well, Emily, like, so I was working all the time, like you said, and I was like, I need, like, a hobby that's not working because this is not healthy, right? And I don't
right.
have kids, and, like, so I was just literally, like, there's a point when it becomes, like, an addiction, kind of. You're addicted to working, and I was like, I have to find something that is an outlet. So... I started taking lessons over at where Ruckus is now, but it was before they had got in there. And then those people, like, left, and Emily and Dirk came in, and they have this horse that they've had forever named Magic. And, I mean, he was just, like, this unicorn. And so he made me just totally fall in love with riding again. And then you know how that goes. Like, once you start, it's like that becomes your addiction. And so then just riding with them and getting into, like, showing and stuff. And then now I have, like, my own Magic, my own dream horse that I got out in Wyoming. And so
congratulations.
Well, thank you. And he is, like a dream. And so we've now, like, I'm not, like, super all about the showing. I do it just to have a connection with him, but we really like trail riding and just getting out and about, like, away from people. Like, that sounds sad because I love people, but after doing, like, a business like this where it's, like, constant people all the time, I love the peace of just, like, taking him and going out on a trail and you know, just making that connection with an animal like that, like a horse, is just brings you back to being a little bit more grounded, you know.
Well,
but I heard on one of your podcasts that you don't ride anymore. So I need that story at some point, too.
This is not about me, ma'am. You're doing great. I think this is absolutely great. No, I don't ride anymore. But it is, you're right, horses can, they're humbling and they do ground you. I think they feel, it makes you feel normal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it takes you away from, because you're right, working can become addictive, and
yeah,
it can become not necessarily the success chasing like people think it is, but I think you have to be, you have to have a little bit of ADHD, you have to have a little bit of, like, you have to be a little bit out there to run a business,
mm-hmm,
and grow a business,
mm-hmm,
and your mind has to constantly be moving, and if it's not moving, then, you know, it's going to find a way to keep moving. And so it's cool that you kind of did that and it brought you to horses, and then that Emily brought you to me, which is super cool because that's how we met, was through Emily.
Yeah. Love her. Love them. Love their program. Love
Yeah,
watching,
they're great.
Oh my gosh. And just like watching them and their persistence, like where they started, because I was there like day one when they first came to that barn, and watching what they've built up in their program, and like the hustle every day, it's just, it's really inspiring to watch them for sure, because they are in it. Like, they are the people in the grind every single day, never taking a day off, like never not riding. You never don't see them there. For me, that's really inspiring to see what they've built, because they just never quit, never, never give up, never question their goals, you know?
No, it is inspiring to see. Well, I don't get to watch them do that, but I do. When you see anybody do that, it's very inspiring, because you've got your mindset on attaining something. You're not going to stop till you get it. Like,
right.
You know, no matter what happens. And horses makes it even harder on any person, because, like we said before, you're dealing with another living, breathing animal that has its own brain.
That makes
it's a lot
bad
harder.
Decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a bicycle that makes bad decisions. That's what I've seen
right.
before, and I was like, oh my gosh, yep, that's how it feels some days. But the amount that they have taught me, that a horse has taught me on the business side, like patience being key, like the energy versus like speaking, just and staying calm, because I'm like naturally anxious, so that doesn't work around horses. So the progression that horses have taught me from, like, just to stay calm in uncomfortable situations and to try to reduce my anxiety, all that kind of stuff, that tool of what the horse has taught me has been probably, like, the biggest teacher in my business life, too, which has been so cool. And now all the horsemanship teachings, like the Buck Brandeman, Ray Hunt, like that kind of stuff, and learning all the groundwork up, it's just amazing how much that can teach you as a human and being better as a human and being better as a leader.
And would you say that horses are not dogs? Are they two different? Are you dealing like two
different
ways, or do you think they're similar?
So different. Yeah, and when I got in, I'm like, oh, I can deal with dogs. Like, of course I can deal with a horse. No, like, just, I think the dogs are just so much more, like, well, being prey versus a predator, right? So dogs have predator in their genes, where horses are prey. So that kind of difference there is, fundamental in how they're different, I think. But the energy is the same. Like, if you stay calm, like, you're calm, assertive, kind of like Caesar says in the dog world, calm and assertive is good in both the horse and the dog world, and just the human world, like, being a leader, staying calm. Like, who do you gravitate more towards in life? It's going to be typically, like, the person who's calm and level-headed and that kind of thing, versus the ones who are, like, all over the place.
Yeah, because that's right. Dogs kind of run in packs, too. They have a pack leader, and horses actually are more they're herd animals.
Yep.
They actually have a leader, too. They like to be in herds. So
right.
I guess that could be where they are similar.
Now, do you guys not have cats, too, or no?
No,
I have cats of my own, but we used to groom cats, but when we got so busy with dogs, we realized, like, don't mix the two. It's very stressful
kick
for
the cats out.
It's very stressful for the cat when you have, like, a bunch of dogs barking in the same room, you know, so we've just left that to the cat people. Love them, but we've left that alone.
I have both. I have a cat. I'm definitely a cat person. Like, my personality is a cat person, but I love dogs too. I have a little mini Aussie, but you are right, though. It would be like, I could see it now, like, just cat sitting there going, can you please shut these up?
And then you're trying to, like, bathe them, you know, which they actually,
right,
like, hate water. So you have dogs barking. They're trying to get wet. You're trying to get them wet. It was kind of not a good situation when we were doing that. But we did it because we had to do – we would have probably, like, you know, groomed a ferret if we had to take money back in the day when we couldn't pay our bills. So it was like, whatever. What do you got?
I'm so glad you said that, because a lot of people, I've dealt with people in small business, and they're like, I have so many messages out there with people just trying to want to buy something, and they won't even speak. And to me, I've always thought the same thing that you said. Like, when you work for yourself, every single penny, dollar, dime, every single bit of it matters, because you remember the times where you didn't have anything. You know it can happen again. Like, it's just, I think there's a little, I don't know how to explain it. I feel like you get what I'm saying, but, like, you know, so to me, I could never leave that on unread. I could never not respond. I could never not.
and solely for the sale, because it's just like, I feel like if you get too comfortable and you act like you're too good, you actually just ruin yourself.
Oh, for
like,
sure. Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. I don't know. Everybody.
You know, that's probably why like second generation businesses fail so often, because I think there's like a, it's a huge statistic of like second generation businesses that fail because now the people in charge never had to do that gritty stuff. They just got handed this business that's up and going, and they've gotten too comfortable and too content. And, you know, where I would say right now, like one of the biggest luxuries that we have being in business, which I very much appreciate, is that we don't have to deal with the unreasonable a-hole client like we used to. So, like, there's a point, you know, where back in the day we would take, like, abuse because we couldn't lose a dollar, and we had to take every single client, no matter how whacked out their demands were and how belittling they were when they came in, and they, but we were the ones working it, so we were the ones taking the abuse. But now that we've gotten like a little bit of financial security, I think that's probably the most empowering thing, is that if I see a client come in and berate an employee, one of my staff, over something unreasonable, like if it's reasonable, like, hey, you didn't properly care for my dog, that's one thing. But if it's like, oh, you know, you missed a hair on this haircut, I am so happy to tell them, there's the door, we're not for you. And that is a luxury that I've never had in business until now. And it feels pretty good to be able to tell someone like, hey, you can't, because if they treat me that way, I don't really, it doesn't bother me. But if they, if I see them treating somebody that, one of my staff that way, I go into like this bear mode that is like, I will, you know, literally like throw you out of this building with my hands. So that's been really nice, you know, a comfort that you get. Yes, like, yes, you still can't get cozy and comfortable, but I think you can set harder boundaries when you get a little bit of security, which is healthy.
Yeah, you're right, because that's a hard decision. Like, I've had to make that decision before, but like, you know what, I really need this sale, but this person just is, they won't answer me, they keep ignoring me, they keep running their mouth, and I'm starting to get pissed off, and I'm like, you know what,
there comes a time, more important than that sale.
Like, you know what, this is not worth it.
yeah, and sometimes you're just like, you know, there's other places that would be
a better
fit for you, you know, and this is just not the right fit, and it's like, you know, I look back and say, maybe we should have cut ties with some people earlier on and not been scared of losing the sale to protect our peace. But, you know, you learn that the hard way, I guess.
Well, and your reputation is on. For me, you know, which, I mean, it sucks. I've been through situations where I had absolutely no control over it. People just blatantly lie. But, you know, you also think about your reputation, and you want to make sure that you've got your receipts right, and you've got, you know, you do the right thing. You know, because people, what I'm trying to say, people will try to corner you with that. They're like, okay, well, I'm the customer, and I'm going to, you know, like, leave you a bad review and blah, 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 blah. And sometimes you just have to take it and go, you know what? I'm not dealing with this no more. Like, you're not going to abuse and push somebody in a corner all in the name of I'm the customer. Okay, well, no. Some things are not tolerated.
Yeah. Isn't that the hardest part of social media, is that like, or just the internet in general with business now, is that one bad review can almost kill your business, especially if you're just starting out. And it's like, you never can get out your side of the story. It's like, I, that has been so hard, because we have it on the customer side, and then we just, at the Nashville Pets Bar, our two locations, we just hired our 175th employee when I was doing payroll on Tuesday.
Oh, wow.
Inevitably, some of those people aren't going to like the way you do stuff. And they can be not a good person. Maybe they are not a good person. And then they can go out and create like a profile and put out stuff on social media. And man, that has been one of the harder things to navigate, on when do you respond? How do you respond? How do you fight this? You know, how do you make sure it doesn't happen in the first place?
I can write a book on this.
Oh, I bet you can. You should, because I would read it. That would be your first.
No, customer. I'm laughing because I don't want anybody to ever have to say those words. You don't want to have to navigate. You don't want to have to do that. And I think that's probably just because you know, if you're a good person,
you can relate to what I'm saying. It's maybe it's wrong to think other people think the same way as you do. There's plenty of people I don't like out there, but I'm not going to make it a point to hurt them. I'm just going to move on with my life.
Right,
you know?
Right. Roll on.
Yeah, or even people that buy from me. I'm sure there's people I spend money with. They don't particularly like me, but you're still going to get the same service that I give somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, but that is a hard thing to deal with because, you know, you don't want to bring your emotions into it, but sometimes you have to. Like, you know, if you've got somebody who's just, like I had this lady, I'll tell you this story. I had this place that I sponsored and I did a lot of things for them. I mean, like I did a lot of things behind closed doors that they apparently didn't tell people. And it come time for me to just kind of be like, okay, well, let me get my banner back and wish y'all the best and blah, blah, blah. They just ignored me and continued to ignore me and ignore me and ignore me and ignore me. And I'm like, this is over a banner? Like I gave you guys hundreds of dollars of stuff to advertise me. I bent over backwards for you. You can't give me the same respect back. You're just, you know, pushing you to the point where you have to act out.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm like thinking to myself, you know, we honestly have no control over another human being, period. None whatsoever. Even if you do everything by the book or even if you don't, like they can take whatever that they can take it and do whatever they want with it.
Yep. In a second. It's wild.
It ruined your life.
Yeah. Something that you've worked, you know, your tail off into the ground, and then just to have someone try to take it away that has no clue and has never been in the trenches. You know, I think the people who have been in business would never do that to someone else. You hope that they wouldn't because they know, you know, what you've gone through to get where you are.
Well, I think it's amazing what you've grown and what you've done and what you have now. And it's really cool to kind of be able to tap into that a little bit and talk about the things that I want to ask you this. What was probably the hardest time or situation that you've had to face in all those years? What's probably the one top five situations that you had to kind of overcome where you just thought, this is it, I'm done.
Make it. Well, COVID was not a fun time because obviously nobody was leaving their home, so there was no daycare, there was no boarding. At the time, grooming was considered a need for the health of a pet. So, but we didn't, you know, think maybe we were going to make it through that for sure. That was a hard time. And then I wouldn't say it was like one time, but there's been a bunch of times where, and I know, like I've talked with Emily about this too before at Ruckus, when you have put all of your energy and your time and your love into what you do as a business, and a lot of times you'll get an employee who you've put a lot of time and energy into where you've treated them like, you know, I've given them places like even invited them into my home if they need a place to stay or, you know, borrowed them a vehicle or just like just things where you really go that extra mile and you actually care about someone and they'll just like leave tomorrow and think you're just like they treat you like a target or something like, oh, I'm just leaving this corporate business where nobody cares about me. And like I have a really hard time when employees leave and like kind of kick you in the face. Because I think they don't understand how much we truly, like, care and the energy that you put in to make sure they're okay. And, like, I think that continues, you know, that – and it can – but then I guess, you know, early on, that about killed me because it was, like, every time it would happen, I would just fall apart. Like, how could they do that? Or, you know, they'd go down the street or they'd you know – whatever it was, they'd bash us or be mad about something that they never came and told us about, you know, and it felt like very out of my control. Like, how do you stop this? And, as we've gone on, it feels personal, which it's not supposed to be, but it is when you've built this. So now when it happens, I find much more, like I'm more peaceful about it. Like that's on them, not on us. And It still hurts when they do it because you feel like I take it personally. Like, what did I do? How could I have done better for this person?
And now I kind of have shifted into like, hey, like let them go, let them fly, let them do what they need to do. And it's about them. It has nothing to do with me or what we could have done better. Probably most likely nothing we could have done would have kept them happy. You know, they just needed that for their own growth and their own life. And so just not taking it personally, that's the hardest part of the job for me. And then of course, like losing dogs, or like if a dog gets hurt on our watch, like I don't even work in the daycare anymore for quite a while, but I still take it as my fault. So I'm like obsessed with every dog that comes in, and I'm like, if a dog gets hurt on our watch, like that's on me. That's because I didn't properly train the staff, or they didn't have the proper tools or screening or whatever. And it's very rare that it happens. Like we do a lot of great things that we've learned over the years, so it doesn't happen very often. But if it does, man, like we had one dog at our new location get hurt when we very first opened, and we she's fine and whatever, but still to this day, a year and a half later, I still board her only at my house. I give her, everything is free, all her grooming, all her boarding, everything is free, because I just felt like that was on me, because we had brand new staff that didn't know, and she's fine, like everything was fine, but still, like I think I take all that stuff really to heart, and I really actually care about the employees and the dogs. And
well, it's so hard, because to run a business, you have to be non-emotional. But on the flip side, you have to be very passionate in order to succeed. It's such a hard line to talk. It's almost like you're skipping rope, because, you know, you have to make business decisions that have no emotion on them. And then sometimes it's like what you just said. It is very, how can you ask somebody who pours their entire heart and soul, all their time, all their energy into something to not get emotional and not care on a certain level? Like,
you'd have to almost be like that narcissist type of personality to do that. You know, you'd have to be
like
doing it for the money or for your benefit. And that is not at all. Like when I go in, I'm like, how would I want my dog to be treated? Which my dogs are my children. So I'm like very particular. And how would I want my child to be treated if they were working for me? And, so I have that type of personality where it's almost like I'm always putting myself in someone else's shoes, and how would I want this to go? Or, you know, even like with vet bills, we don't have to pay a vet bill if a dog gets hurt or something. We always do, just because it's the right thing, you know?
Right. It's just the right thing. I'm so glad you said it. It's just the right. Sometimes business
right
can actually be pretty simple. It's just the right thing to do.
So I'm so glad that we got to talk, and I want to hear more about your business instead of me talking next time. So,
no, I want to. I need to learn from you. You're doing way more than me.
And there too, about like being a woman in business is still 10 times harder than being a man in business. So when you have other women that go through the struggles together, like supporting each other, like you're doing, and promoting other women in their businesses and all that, like, that is like the queen of all queens, because it's hard. It's hard when you're a woman, right? Like I still do feel like there are challenges we face that men don't sometimes. And so,
you know,
you for supporting other women.
This is funny that you just said that, because I feel like I have a little bit of advantage, and I'm going to tell you why. Because I used to work at a strip club for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to make money in that type of environment with those types of men, you have to be able to separate what most women, most offended, they get defensive, they get all types of ways, right? But when you can flip the script in your mind, as you are now in control of that type of mentality that most men have towards women in business, it can help you. And when it comes to running a business, because we're built differently, we're just built differently.
Right.
And it's cool. That's all I'm going to say. It's to actually put that guard down, and you can find control in the vulnerability of being a woman that they already expect you to be. Does that make sense?
Yes, very much. Very much. I'm sad to say, I don't feel like we experience it as much with our, like with male employees. I feel like it's female employees that we've had a hard time with that are so critical of how we do things. Like and they're probably not the right ones. They're probably not the ones who are around to this day, you know, but there's a little bit of like, I feel like I could do that better than her. Where my ex, he ran several businesses, and he, like my ex-husband up in Wisconsin, and his employees never questioned like what he did sometimes, you know, like a lot. I wouldn't say never questioned, but I felt like they questioned it a lot less because there was this natural like respect that they have coming in when a man is running a business. I don't know. And maybe that's not.
No. You're very right. You're very right. It's women have a tendency to bring in, and I'm not trying to offend anybody. I'm just being extremely honest. Women have a tendency to bring in emotions that don't need to be there. Like, yeah. I've had to deal, most of my issues with business have not been with men. It has been with women. Mm-hmm. And it's because it's been, like, some made-up competition you didn't know you were in. Or maybe it was, like, some type of, they feel some type of way that's, like, out of your control, you know. And those are most of the things that I've had to deal with. And I don't have any advice with it. I just try to walk away from it because it's very rare that you're able to have a good, like, a decent conversation with that person and be like, all right, look, you know, this is where we're at, blah, 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 blah. I actually end up just walking away because there's nothing you can do about it.
And you end up just appreciating when you recognize the people who aren't that way, that are really out for your success and their own success and just out for raising the bar as a whole. I feel like I can recognize those people so much more quickly now.
Yeah.
Like there's no competition. There's no undermindedness. It's just like a, hey, let's raise the bar for women business owners in general. Let's talk about ideas and let's talk about, you know, best practices, not let's talk about, you know, this person down the road or how I'm scared of competition. Like, I'm truly not scared of competition anymore. If one of our groomers wants to go start another grooming shop, we don't have non-competes. We're like, yeah, you want to start one? Like, more power to you. How can we help you? There's plenty of dogs to go around, and we want to know that someone that we trained, that we feel like we do it the right way and we do, like, care the best way. We want more of you out in the world being successful. So I feel like I can recognize that in another woman a lot sooner than I used to be able to, where it was really like more of a competition thing that you said, a competition you didn't even know you were in. That's the one.
Yeah, it happens. It's there. Like, and see, people were thinking like I'm crazy. I'm like, no, like this is a one-sided deal. I mean, and it doesn't do any good. Like, and it's usually the girls that are preaching women empowerment. Okay, well, if you really for women empowerment, you would drop these petty emotions that you got.
And same in the horse world, right?
Yeah, and take the spoon out of the pot and stop stirring up crap that don't even exist. It's like, But it just goes right back to what I said. You can't, once somebody has something set in their brain of how something is, it's going to be a waste of time at a certain point. And so I usually end up walking away because it's like, okay, well, think what you want to think and do what you want to do. It sucks that this happens because we could be helping each other.
Yeah. But there'll be another lady down the road that needs help and we'll help each other and we'll figure it out. And that person that's insecure in their own way is going to get left behind is what they don't realize.
I feel better that it happens in the dog world too, though.
Oh yeah, for sure. Quite a bit, you know, quite a bit. And truly, like, it's the people who are supportive of others and not scared of protecting their own selves that are the ones that grow and thrive, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I do believe you have to protect certain things. Like, some things are just, it is what it is in business, like, because people are people and you have to, it's just like, what's that quote that was going around that said, competition happens at the bottom, the top's collaborating. And
that's,
I hate that
right.
quote.
Right.
I hate it. And I'm going to tell you why.
Oh, you don't
I hate
like it.
It.
No.
No. This is why I don't like it. Well, because it portrays roses and rainbows. And it's really not like that. Because have you ever seen Nike and Adidas collaborating?
No.
Exactly. Do you see CVS and Walgreens having brunch?
That is true. There's a lot of healthy things that can come out of competition too. You know, a lot of it can make you better. Competition can make you better and your company better. If your competitors are raising the standard, you're going to raise your standard.
I just think it's like, I think it portrays this environment in business at the top that's just not realistic. It's just not. And even if you get into musicians and movie stars and that, you have contracts in place. So it's just not, it's not realistic to think there's no competition at the top. I mean, we literally have the Olympics going on right now.
Yes.
That is a competition at the very top. Like, it blows my mind. People are like, you know, and I understand collaborating. I understand all of that. I totally get that. And I'm for supporting other people if you stay in your lane. If you come in my lane, we will
and
have a problem.
Steal your ideas.
Nothing to do with competition.
Right, right. And steal your thoughts and your...
Yeah, it's just business. It's not competition.
Right.
It's just business. And, you know, like I had this lady in Michigan who bought hats for me. And she bought hats with the pure intention to do what I do and then, like, prey on my weaknesses and then downplay whatever else that I was doing. That was her whole reason for doing that. And some people are like, okay, well, there's enough out there. Sure, there is, but doing it that way is not the way to do it.
No, you need to do it in a respectful way. And,
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And on your own. Have some of your own ideas. Like, don't just be stealing everybody else's and... Yeah, that's why some of these groups on Facebook, I get so annoyed because they'll ask these questions that we had to figure out the hard way, which I'm all about, like, giving advice and stuff. But sometimes I look at it, I'm like, you should not even be in business if you don't know the answer to this. Like, this is a basic common sense. And then I'm like, oh, but everybody can just throw up a sign and go into business, and they shouldn't be there, and they shouldn't be, you know. That is where, you know, that's not – or that competition is good because you know you're going to win every time when you have – people that are clueless at the bottom.
Right. Right. Or put their stuff, like I've seen exactly what you've talked about too. Like, some people kind of ask certain things and say certain things and I'm like, okay, I see what you're trying to do. This is
like,
not.
They probably look at your success. This is where it gets irritating. When they look at your success and how well you're doing and they're like, oh, that looks like she made it look so easy. I can just do that tomorrow and everything's going to be like, no problem. Like, I'll just be making money and having orders coming out of my ears in a week if I just do what she did. And they have no idea what you did behind the scenes or the struggles you had to get where you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I'm glad that this makes me feel really cool that, you know, you can tell the difference between just me and you talking about our struggles, the things, even the things you did, making treats at home and pounding the pavement and all of that kind of grindy, dirty stuff. That's what does separate you from the person that's going to last a couple of months to a year versus 16 years. That's
you just hope they don't bring your industry down in the meantime, right? Like, people pushing out crappy products that you would never send to your customer. And then, you know, then they bring the trust down from the client of the whole industry, which is really frustrating. But like, what I heard when I was going to order stuff from you and Emily was talking about how you do business, she said you sent her something that she would have never questioned. Like, she thought it looked just fine. And you called and were like, I'm giving you credit for whatever it was. I don't remember what exactly she said, but it was some piece of merchandise that you were like, I thought about it after I sent it, and I wouldn't want you touting that, or I wouldn't want you paying for that because it's not my best work, and I'm going to send you like something better or whatever. And you didn't even have to do that. She didn't complain. It was just the right thing, and you did it, and it shows like your standard of how you do your business versus someone else would have been like, huh, they didn't even notice that that was crooked or whatever, and just kept their paycheck and never thought twice about it. That's the difference.
You are
of caring
right.
And not caring. Yeah.
That
means a lot for me to be like, I need to do business with Bree, because that's how I run my business and that's how I would want somebody to treat me. So,
stop it. This is about you.
And I think that's how Emily does business too. So I feel like it's very, you know, you end up in the universe meeting the right people.
I think I'm very proud of Emily, and I don't know her as well. I feel like you've probably known her longer than I've known her, but I'm very proud of Emily, and I'm really glad that she hooked us up. Yeah, I think Emily, she's a hard worker, and she's like, I think I even told you or told her this. I'm like, she's not going to stop till she gets to where she's going.
That's right.
And that takes a type of grit that a lot of people can't handle, because it's going to include failures. It's going to include mistakes. It's going to include things that people are uncomfortable with. And Emily's like, I don't care. I'm just going to keep on going.
Keep grinding. Yep.
And I love that. I think it's freaking, I think it's amazing. And the horse industry needs more of that because a lot of people get in the horse industry, like what you just said, they'll see it out here on social media and they'll see this and that. And they think, oh, okay, well, it's easy. No, it's not easy.
No, no.
It's very, it's hard.
It's hard. And you can't fake it. Like you actually have to put the work in or it's going to show.
Yeah. 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 You're right.
Mm-hmm.